You're listening to the Financial Framework Show with the man who can show you how to be debt-free. Now, here's Steve Barfield on WGAA, 1340 AM, the Big Double A.
Welcome to the Financial Framework Show, and I hope you're all having a good afternoon. And if you're out there driving, make sure you keep your eyes on the road. And if you missed something on today's show, you can go to the Financial Framework Show website and listen to the recorded broadcast. So be safe while you're out there. The web address is www.financialframeworkshow.com. That's www.financialframeworkshow.com. Look in the top right-hand corner for the login button, and in there you'll see the WGAA radio section. The Financial Framework Show will be a 30-minute weekly broadcast every Wednesday at 3 p.m., and soon it will change to an hour format with live call-in questions. Now, if you have any questions before then, please send me an email at steve@financialframeworkshow.com. That's S-T-E-V-E, steve@financialframeworkshow.com, and I'll answer them for you. Now, we will read some of the questions on the air so that the other listeners can benefit from this information. And remember, there is no such thing as a dumb question. The only dumb question is the ones that's not asked. Now, how you doing today? How's your attitude? You know, attitude is everything. Your attitude controls who you are and what you become. And if you think you can, you can. And if you think you can't, you're absolutely right. Now, as I told you last week, I think it is important for you to know who I am and why I'm qualified to talk to you each week about money and other life issues. Now, I've always had the attitude that before I'm going to listen to someone, I want to feel like they really know what they're talking about. I wouldn't want someone trying to teach me how to bench press 500 pounds if they had never worked out with weights before. And I think you would feel the same way. I will apologize up front if this part of the show is boring, but once again, I feel it is so important for you to know who you're listening to each week. So here we go. Now, Teresa and I were both born in Cobb County, Georgia, and don't worry, I'm not going to give you the details from our birth until we met. I will fast forward through our younger years, but I'll tell you that my parents got a divorce when I was in my early teens, and that was a real hard thing for me to go through. And it was that experience that caused me to make up my mind that no matter what, I was going to stay the course if God ever blessed me with children. And I still love my parents dearly, and I talk to them every day, and I thank God for them. And my comments are not directed at them or any one of you who might be divorced listening in today. I'm only talking about my own convictions. I've always lived in or around the same county that I was born in, and back in the olden days when I was young, the roads were not nearly as crowded as they are now, and I started driving on a dirt road when I was about 13 years old. Now, this was not unusual in a small town back then, and I would drive myself to school, to football practice, and every Friday, Saturday, and Monday nights, I went roller skating. The roller rink back then was the place that most teenagers went to hang around, and I actually loved to skate, and I still do. And one night I was sitting on the rail next to the rink floor, and a beautiful dark-headed girl comes skating by, and I looked at her and I thought, wow. And so a few minutes later, I got the courage up to ask her to skate. She smiled and said, sure. Now, over the next few weeks, we skated together, and I finally wound up getting her phone number. And every night that we were not at the skating rink, I would call and talk to her for hours. And I didn't realize it then, but she really helped me through my parents splitting up. Now, one night I called her and she was crying, and I asked her what was wrong, and she informed me that her father, who was a chemist for Borden's at the time, was being transferred to Wisconsin, and she let me know that she was going to have to move. And I'll tell you right now, this hit me like a ton of bricks, and I thought, you can't leave me too. So the next words out of my mouth was, do you want to get married? And she quickly replied, yes. We were 15 by then, and that night we started making plans on how we're going to pull this off. Now, after a lot of phone calls and research, we found a probate judge, Mr. Watson, in Fruithurst, Alabama, that agreed to marry us. This took about 3 months, and one Friday evening, I picked her up like we were going to the skating rink, and we headed for the Alabama line. Both of us scared to death, but determined to spend the rest of our lives together. Teresa had no bridal shower, no fancy wedding planned, or a beautiful white dress like girls like to have. Teresa had on a little blue dress, and I had on my blue jeans. When we arrived at Skyway Hunting Lodge, Mr. Watson turned out to be a very nice person, and he did perform the ceremony just like he had promised to do. We then took off back to Georgia, and when I got into phone range where the call wouldn't be long distance, I pulled over to payphone and called her dad. She had a 10:30 curfew, and it was now 11:15. So, our conversation didn't start off very well, and it sure didn't end very good. and I informed him that we had gotten married and that I was not bringing her home. Now, I cannot repeat the rest of our conversation, but it was pretty tough. And, you know, looking back, I would have been even worse than he was. And not to get off the story, but about 6 years ago, I was the one who carried her father to the doctor to find out that he had 3 months to live. And it was just the two of us on the way home, and I told him that I had always wanted to apologize for stealing his daughter the way that I did, and that I was truly sorry for all the hurt and pain that I put them through. Now, this was a load off of my heart, and he responded with such nice comments about, you know, how proud of us he was. And I didn't let him see me with watery eyes because he had just been given the worst news that anyone could ever hear. Sadly to say, he stopped eating that day, and within about 3 weeks, he was gone to be with the Lord. Now, back to the phone call. After I went and got back into the car, both of us looked like we had seen a ghost. We went down to the Holiday Inn near the Atlanta airport and got a room. I'll never forget, we stayed up all night just sitting there staring at the door. We expected it to come crashing down at any minute. Much to our surprise, we made it through the night, and then the next day, we went to a friend of mine's house and stayed until they found us. It took them about 2 weeks to find out where we were at, and I guess by then, us being married was old news, and I don't know why, but they decided to let us be. We lived with my mother for the first 6 months and then got ourselves an apartment, and we were so proud and so broke, but still excited about the future. Now, it wasn't very long after we got married that we found out that Teresa was going to have a baby. We went to the Burger King that evening and celebrated, and we were so excited, but both of us were absolutely terrified. In the first months of our marriage, I worked at a furniture store that my best buddy's dad owned. And when I turned 16, I was able to add another full-time job on a soft drink route truck, and the delivering furniture became a part-time job. I also found work at a tire store fixing tractor-trailer tires, and I also loaded trucks on the weekend at a freight line in Marietta. I kept 4 jobs going at all times, and I did this so that Teresa could stay at home and raise our baby, which, by the way, became 2 babies, and by the time we were both 19 years old, we had our 3rd child, and we also bought our first little house and moved out of the apartments. The bottom line was, we were 2 children that had brought 3 more children in the world. Now, I forgot to mention that while we were living in the apartments, my grandfather, Pop, came to live with us. I had spent almost every weekend of my young life with him, and he was my bestest buddy, and he lived with us until he died. In the early years, you can imagine how Teresa and I struggled financially, but we always placed our children's needs before our own. We knew that every child that has ever been born on this earth was a true blessing from God, an angel directly from heaven above. And our children, just as yours are, were and are, absolutely beautiful. We were so broke that it hurts just thinking back on those old days. It was almost impossible for me to work enough jobs, and may I say physical labor jobs, because I didn't get to finish school and get a proper education, so I hope the young people will listen to me about this. We did get our GEDs when we turned 18, and I got my real estate license when I was 19. And my dad has been a real estate broker now for about 40 years, and I only got the license because he wanted me to, and by the way, I've kept him active all these years. Now, the rough times back then, they never seemed to get any better, and we never seemed to ever have enough money from month to month to even get by with. And I remember thinking, how in the world do those little babies go through so much formula and diapers? That stuff was expensive. I mean, it was amazing to me. You know, and there would be times around the house when we didn't have a single penny. And I would finally break down and ask Pop if I could write him a check for $10 and ask him if he could hold it until Friday when he got paid. And, you know, when Pop died, I got his stuff, and in his wallet I found those $10 checks that I had wrote him over the years. That goes to show you how good of a job we did balancing our checkbook back then. And we had to become really creative when it come to keeping me fed and clothed because of the way I worked. And we found out that when you make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, that if you'll put peanut butter on both sides of the bread, that the jelly won't seep through when it gets hot, you know, especially in the summertime. And we would buy my work boots from the Army Surplus Store, and we bought combat boots because they were durable and cheap. And we didn't realize that these boots were really designed to be used on dirt and not asphalt and concrete. And we couldn't understand why and how I was able to wear through those soles so fast. Now, when they did have holes in the bottom, we would put cardboard and duct tape in them to make them last a little bit longer. And when it rained, my feet was wet from before daylight to way past dark. And now in the mornings, I can barely walk due to the damage I guess I did to my feet back then. And it still takes me a few minutes every morning just to get going. Now, this is something that I remember so distinctively. I had a problem running out of gas, and I would run out of gas on the average of about 3 times per month. And this one time really sticks out in my mind. It was a Friday night, and I had cashed my check at work, and we had about $2 or $3 left from that check that didn't need to go to bills. So that was gas money. And I had left home at 4:30 that morning with a gas tank on empty, and I prayed all the way to work that I wouldn't run out. And that night when I was on the way home, there was a long stretch of road, and I could see the service station sign up about 200 or 300 yards in front of me. Now, the road was straight as a board, and the teenagers, they were cruising on both sides of the road, and they were stopping and starting, and they were having a blast, and I was just sitting there hoping and praying that I could make it to that station. Well, you know what happened. I was probably about 100 yards from the pump, and you would know it, the car quit. I was so tired, and I was so hungry and frustrated and really embarrassed. I finally just got out of the car, I stuck my arm in the window, and I pushed the car right along with the traffic, and I would start and stop the car by pulling on the steering wheel. And those kids, they laughed at me, they called me every name that you could imagine, and I just kept my head down and just, I pushed it all the way up to the pump. And while all this was going on, Teresa was at home with 3 babies, almost in diapers at the same time. No car, bill collectors calling, and that was when the phone was turned on. And she would stand at the window and just cry when the gas man would turn the gas off, or the water man would turn the water off. I would call home for my route to check on them whenever I could using a customer's phone, and a lot of times the phone would be cut off. And you see, this was our life. But I realized that no one owed us anything, so we didn't ask for anything, except for the $10 a few times from Pop. And I think that we all have our defining moments in our lives, and I can remember mine just like it happened. On my route truck one real cold day, it was raining and sleeting, and I had a real bad cold. And looking back on it, it was probably the flu. And there was one of the stores that kept their empty bottles in a little field next to the store. And I never understood why they didn't keep them under the awning out front or somewhere in the store, but they didn't. And you see, before I could load those empty bottles on the truck, the cases had to have the same types of bottles in them. So I was out there in a sleeting rain sorting the bottles, and I felt like death warmed over, and I guess my back must have gotten tired, so I just went down to one knee in the mud. And then all of a sudden, I became really frustrated and disgusted, and I stopped sorting the bottles. And I actually started daydreaming about school, and there I was on my knee in the mud, and I could visibly see the classrooms and my buddies, just like I was there. I was trying to imagine what they were doing at that particular moment. And I mean, it was really and truly just like I was in the same room with them. Now, I don't know how long this went on, but all of a sudden I asked myself, why are you thinking about this? You're never going to be able to go back to that school. You're never going to be able to play baseball or football again. So why are you wasting time in the pouring, freezing rain? And then all of a sudden it hit me. And I remembered the promise that I made to God and to myself about staying with my children until they were 18 years old. I remember thinking that they didn't ask to be brought into this world. I brought them in, and it is my responsibility to take care of them. Now, all of this started running through my head, and bam, I stood up and looked up at the sky with a freezing rain hitting me in the face and running down my neck, and I said, God, I am so sorry for these thoughts, and I promise you I will never look back again, and I will see this through as promised. Please give me the strength. And I'm sure if someone was looking out a window of that store, they probably didn't know what in the world was going on. Here's a young guy standing in the freezing rain, soaking wet, looking up at the heavens and talking to someone. Now, after my little talk with God, I finished sorting those bottles, and as I promised, I never looked back. Now, in saying all of this, it really sounds pretty selfish. And, you know, back then, being young, I really thought I had it rough back then, and I guess I must have felt sorry for myself back then with all the jobs and working mostly 7 days a week, but I was too immature to understand what that little girl that I married was going through. And a few years ago, we were talking about the beginning, and she told me that her biggest fear back then was that when we had our first, and then our second, and then the third child, and remember, we were 19 then, that her biggest fear was that I would leave her. One humorous thing happened when Kim, our youngest daughter, turned 18. At her birthday party, the entire family let me know that the youngest child is now 18 and that I could go on my way. Of course, they were joking and really thought it was funny, but I looked at them and I told them I was not going anywhere, that I was not finished with my responsibilities. And they laughed, and I thought to myself, I am so serious. Now, so far, I have shared with you our humble beginnings, and when I fast forward to the present, I have now been in the financial services industry for almost 25 years. I started helping people get out of debt in 1994 and have helped thousands with this most important quest. And when I tell you things about money, when I give you advice about finances, it is from real life experience and practice. It's been my job. I'm not on this show telling you how to do things that I've not done for people hundreds, if not thousands of times. Now, to finish the story, well, not to finish it because there's still a lot to do, but this coming April, we will celebrate 38 years of being married. And not only do we have three God-fearing, hard-working, productive children, but now God has blessed us with seven beautiful grandchildren. God is so good. Now, once again, if this bored you, I am sorry, but I wanted you to know that I know from real life experiences what you're going through and probably what you'll go through in the future. And I hope that you feel that I am fully qualified to assist you in becoming financially free and back in control. And I wanted you to know that I have a burning desire deep down in my heart to make a difference in people's lives so that they don't have to go through the things that I've gone through. And I am committed to doing all that I can while I'm here on this earth. And I hope that you'll be a part of saving America from debt with me, one family at a time. Now, let's change gears and talk about the worst financial tool that has ever been perpetrated on the American consumer, and that is credit cards. Now, as I begin to talk about credit cards, I will hit them as hard as I can. But these comments are not directed at your local hometown banks. These comments are directed at the money people, the Federal Reserve banks, and the Visas and MasterCards of the world. They are the ones who are playing these nasty games with people's lives and futures. And I was thinking about giving you some history on credit cards, but that's not very important. The most important thing with the time that we have left on today's show is to pick up when they began to destroy the American economy. In 1968 is when credit cards became what we know as credit cards today. This is when our country's financial problems began to skyrocket. And if you follow consumer debt numbers, bankruptcies, and divorces, you will see that after 1968, these problems went from a small increase each year to many times worse. And credit cards, they're the worst single financial tool that has ever existed. And see, being human, I mean, we're easy to sway and talk into things. And credit card companies, they know this. And they spend a lot of money on advertising. And just look at the commercials they put on TV. They try to act like they care about us and they want to help us. And their advertisements try to make you think that credit cards are what you need to have the things that you want. And they talk about being free to do whatever you want to do. And they use the word priceless. And they show emotional family scenes that they try to make you think that credit cards are all right. Or you can't live without them. And let's look at really and truly how much they care about you. You see, they have gone now so far that United States senators have passed legislation in an attempt to stop overzealous credit card companies from piling on interest rates and fees that have plunged many millions of Americans deeper into debt. Now, most of the new changes will go into effect February 2010. But before I go into the new changes, you can rest assured they have already thought up more schemes than the ones that are supposed to be stopped. Now, in fact, since the new law was passed, and while they're waiting to implement the rest of them, they have already raised interest rates on consumers with good credit scores to 25 to 30% and even more. And they have decreased individuals and small business credit limits without any reason or warning. Now, you might ask yourself, how can they do this on someone who has a good credit score? And the answer is simple. They can do basically anything they want to you because their home offices are in states with either weak or no usury laws. What this means is their home offices are not in states like Georgia or Texas or Michigan, states where there would be a cap on the maximum interest rate and fees that they could charge you. They're in states where they can do anything in the world they want to do to you, and they can do it legally because of those states. Now, this by itself should be enough to let you know that they don't care about us. And if they did, why wouldn't they cap a credit card maybe at 18%? I mean, even though this is high, I mean, we have had them come through our office at the most I have seen is 100.99%. And I have a copy of that statement. And I was amazed and so disappointed that people are being so mistreated by these credit cards, these issuers of credit cards. And you know, the upper class population, they're in a position to use credit cards in the way that they were intended to be used. At least, so they think. You see, the proper way to use a credit card, don't use one at all, but the proper way is to pay them off each month and never carry a balance. But the credit card issuers, or even charging fees now, people with no balances. So I really don't know how they're intended to be used. I know that I don't like credit cards, and if I can do my job today explaining them to you, I would hope that you'd never want to use them again. And if you have to use one, I want you to look straight down into it, and I want you to see the old devil staring right back at you with that mean old nasty smile on his ugly old face. And seriously though, I mean, I despise credit cards, and I have to watch myself doing this because I get carried away, and I just want you to fully understand how dangerous these things are and what they will do to your family and your financial health. Now, you know, you will learn that I try to use common sense with everything that I do and everything that I teach. And these credit card issuers, now think about this, they will take a family who is already struggling to make these sky-high credit card payments. Then they will increase the minimum payments and increase their already high interest rate. Now, what this does is raise their minimum payments even higher. Now, why wouldn't they just leave this consumer alone so that they can pay back the money they've borrowed? When they raise these interest rates and minimum payments, the cardholders, they cannot pay the bill, and eventually they have to default on the contract. Then the issuer of the credit card has to write off the debt as bad debt or uncollectible debt. Then they sell the debt to a collection agency who then hounds the people to the end of the earth or until they either give in or forced to file bankruptcy. And this is the worst of all, in my opinion. Then the issuer of the credit cards, they will then go to the U.S. government and take our taxpayer money to make up for this loss they brought on themselves. Now, I'm telling you right now, we need for every American citizen to pay off their credit cards and never use one again. Now, let's talk about the new law that will begin in 2010. It is called the Credit Card Accountability, Responsibility, and Disclosure Act of 2009. Now, the legislation might improve consumer disclosures, but stops short of capping interest rates and fees. And I wonder why that is. Can you imagine an industry that's so dishonest that laws have to be passed to protect the innocent consumers? And the law will still only cover the tip of the iceberg when it comes to stopping these predators from destroying families by the millions. And I know that we, the consumer, have to take responsibility when we use credit cards. If we didn't use them, then they couldn't steal and take advantage of us. But since we do use them, the games that they will play with us will always be in their favor, and just as soon as they can, they will think of some more ways to steal money from people. Now, let's go ahead and look at some of the changes that have already gone into effect or will by February 2010. Now, the first one is what they call retroactive rate increases. Now, credit card issuers, they cannot raise interest rates on existing balance unless a promotional rate expired or if you paid late by 60 days or more. They're supposed to have done away with the universal default or anytime, any reason clauses, which allowed them to raise your rates if you were late on a garbage bill or anything else. So far, it sounds pretty good, doesn't it? It sounds like we might be on the right track. But remember what I said a few minutes ago. They will find ways around the new law and continue to steal and destroy lives. So when I read the new law a little further, it also says that they can raise your rate at any time for any reason on new balances with a 45 days advance notice. This one clause negates the change that I spent time telling you about. They can raise the rate to whatever they want with absolutely no cap. I mean, these people are treating the American consumer so bad, and even the U.S. government cannot make them treat people fair and honest. Another one of the laws. Fee restrictions. Credit card companies cannot charge more than one over-limit fee per billing cycle. Now, first of all, can you imagine how they could have ever justified charging you more than one over-limit fee per month? I mean, whatever the new law says, they'll figure out a way to get around it. Now, this is a good one if they can make it stick. And on this one, they have a law that they've passed that they cannot give a credit card to a consumer under 21 years old who cannot prove an independent means of income or provide a cosigner age 21 or older. You know, they have destroyed so many kids' lives in college, and I have seen so many sad stories and heard of kids committing suicide when the credit cards would pile up on top of them, and the credit card companies will then have the audacity to still send credit card applications to their parents years after the kids are gone. I just don't understand it. I mean, we're not dealing with normal people here. Anyone that can do this to people and sleep at night, I don't want to be anywhere around when they meet our maker. Now, ends double cycle billing. The new law bans double cycle billing. Before, they could charge you on current and also previous balance. Now, where in the world do these people get these crooked and insane ideas to steal money from us? I don't know. Now, the next time you see one of these advertisements on TV, think about some of these things when they play the soft music and tell you how how you cannot live without them, or how you can make your dreams come true and they're there with their arms open for you. And, you know, another couple of things that they're supposed to do with these new laws is they're supposed to have a fair payment allocation and also more time to pay. But here again, if they can't figure out how to get around these changes, they'll figure out some new ways to replace them and more. You know, in 2006, they hit the American consumer with more than $25 billion of late fees and penalties. And keep in mind that the far majority of late fees and penalties are done by manipulating the numbers to their favor. I have not been able to dig up any recent numbers, but I would guess that they are as bad or worse knowing these people and their practices. Well, this show today went from letting you know about who I am, where I came from, and how Teresa and I survived all the devil threw at us. And then we finish with the one tool that has destroyed millions of families like yours and mine. Families that could not get past the thievery, which put them in a downward spiral with no chance to recover. When people are having a tough time financially, they wind up only focusing on that one spot in their lives, that one temporary moment, that one temporary problem or glitch in their lives, and they lose focus on the big picture. They cannot see all the blessings that God has surrounded them with, and they wind up consumed with this one problem. It's like the old adage, you cannot see the forest for the trees, and how true this statement really is. Now, next week, we will continue our discussions about people being done wrong, but this time, we will hit the mortgage industry. And I'm going to leave you the one question for you to think about when it comes to mortgages. For an example, if you had a 6% 30-year fixed mortgage, when do you actually pay 6%? Now, I will answer this and cover the basics that you need to know about mortgages, and then we will talk about the importance of budgeting. The EC budgeting system is different than any that you've ever seen, and you don't have to sell your stuff to make it work and get out of debt. You will like this concept and the fresh ideas to manage your hard-earned money. Now, each week, I'll give you important information that will have a definite impact on your lives, and here again, I've already told you this. It's my mission in life to free God's people from the bondage of debt, one family at a time. And I think after you listen to me each week, I think you'll join me in this most important crusade. Well, our time is about up today, but before we sign off, I want to encourage you to go to the Financial Framework Show website and look around. There's a lot of information available on the site, not only for you, but also for you to share with your church about the possibility of running the Financial Framework Seminar there. It is imperative that we free God's people from the bondage of debt. Next week, you can catch a Financial Framework Show on Wednesday at 3 p.m., it will be a good show. So until next Wednesday, be safe in your travels and may God bless.
You've been listening to the Financial Framework Show with the man who can show you how to be debt-free. Join Steve Barfield again here soon on WGAA 1340 AM, the Big AA.